Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Here we are, it's the 18th of December, and therefore it will be solstice in a minute.
In a minute.
It's a very Devonian thing to say, isn't it?
Is it 21st this year?
Uh-huh, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what the solstice is and defend my position, hilariously, on actually celebrating Christmas. So solstice... Sol, sun, stis, still. From stisere, still. The sun stands still.
Yeah.
Takes place twice a year, winter solstice, summer solstice, the sun stands still. So what that means is that the sun appears to rise and set at exactly the same place on the horizon for 3 days and nights, which then means... So the sun standing still in the winter solstice is the moment of the longest night. So the solstice is the longest night. So the sun sets the earliest and rises the latest on that night. And the summer solstice obviously is the other way around. It's the shortest night and the longest day. Which means, so the solstice, the one we celebrate is the solstice, is the first one. So that's the longest night.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are... two more, and then we're on Christmas Day, which is the day actually that the sun returns. Yes. And so that is the day where the days start getting longer. And therefore, I arrive at solstice celebrating that longest night and celebrating the joy of the deep drop into the arms of the ultimate amount of darkness on this little island, the longest hours of the dark and the deliciousness of, for me, there being such a sense of a pause. And I always experience those 3 days as being outside of time, pretty much, as the kind of great wheel of the year seems to stop, you know, it really does, It seems to stop. And then when Christmas Day comes around, we kind of over one notch and
the sun returns
mm-hmm. and the days start getting longer and the nights start getting shorter and we're heading to Imhoc and we're heading to Beltane and, you know, spring's going to come again. Yeah. The seeds are going to...
And no matter how cold it is and no matter how windy and bitter in March, it's getting lighter.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I asked about the 21st because sometimes it can be on the 20th or the 22nd.
Yeah. No, it's
but it is this year on Monday. Yes, last year it was Sunday the 22nd. So it's trying to find out what time it is, but I can't find it at the moment. But it's definitely 21st. Yes, it's such an important time, and there's always a sadness after the summer solstice for me because it's wonderful. We're going to the fruiting time.
Mm.
And the deliciousness of summer and autumn. But there's still it's turned, you know, we're going down towards the darkness again. Whereas with the winter, I say to people regularly, I say to all my relatives who are getting on a bit and who always complain about November and December weather, bless them, I'll go, it's just 13 more days or it's just this more days until the light. It's going to start getting light again tomorrow. I know it's a long haul, but it does cheer them up.
Yeah, I realised, so funny, I think I only realised it last year, that every single season I begin with, ooh, this is my favourite.
Yes!
And that,
I have to admit, I rather do the same. Yes!
And I do, I love autumn, I love winter, I love spring and I love summer. And one of the things I love about living on the British Isles is... that we have 4 really distinct seasons.
Yes.
And I'm not completely sure I could cope with, you know, the many places around the world where they basically have 2.
Oh, it was weird. I lived in Montana.
Yeah.
And Montana is one state down from Canada. It is the next state down from Canada. And spring was 2 weeks longer and autumn was 3.
Wow.
Spring comes halfway through April, well, no, towards the end of April, and it involves snow overnight, snowdrops, daffodils, tulips, lilac, and all the spring flowers blooming simultaneously.
All in a rush.
Yes, and it's 70 degrees by noon. So the snow, people jog to work in their shorts in the snow because by the time they get to work, the snow will have melted. It's the most extraordinary
time.
As an experience, it was lovely because the beauty of those 2 weeks, I cannot tell you. Can you imagine all the flowers of spring?
Happening all at once.
Happening all at once. And of course, autumn, the fall over there is the beauty of the trees, the aspens changing. That does last a bit longer than the actual weeks, but it's basically summer is just about to end now. We're going to have thunderstorms now. Snow! Snow by the 1st of October and snow until the end of April.
Wow.
End of. 4 feet of it, if you're lucky.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that in itself has a magnificence. But yes, you're right. I did miss spring and I adore autumn nowadays. Absolutely adore it. I mean, for all its gifts, apart from the
year. Yeah, but to me, that every single season brings the most extraordinary gifts.
And that's true.
Just, oh, you know, to be able to experience the constant change that is so overt in our landscape, in the country, in the British Isles. And,
oops, oh. Sorry, left my email thing on. I will admit.
That it's, you know, it does make it pretty, pretty simple to be desperately in love with all of nature and to be able to, you know, we're back to the image and metaphor. The land writes it really large. That, you know, I'm doing spring and I'm going to be doing spring for like 3 months and I'm going to be doing summer for 3 months and then I'm going to be doing autumn for 3 months and I'm going to be doing winter for 3 months. And it fits really neatly with how we celebrate the turning of the world and the metaphors for growth, birth, massive life, going down towards death, being in the earth, germinating, sleeping, all those things. They are totally written in capital letters across every moment of every day in this landscape. And so they're really easy to access as the journey of every passing moment and of all of our lifetimes.
Yes.
So, yes. It's, you know, we are very blessed in that regard.
We really, really are. And I just love, as part of my appreciation, say thank you for the gift of surviving to live through another spring this beautiful. Thank you for the gift of surviving this autumn and seeing all its beauty. And thank you for the gift of going into this winter of the unknown. Because it's all going, we don't know how things are going to turn out. We don't know who's going to be, we never know who's going to live or die. But this year it's even more critically balanced. So, and we don't know what we're doing for Christmas. Well, by the time this goes out, we'll know what we're doing for Christmas, probably. But it's...
I hope so, Maggie, because by the time this goes out, Christmas will be 1 week away exactly.
Well, this is true, but they are talking about maybe changing some of the stuff on December the 16th, and we're recording just before that. So.
Oh, are they? God, I really must keep
good up. Old
they. You're my main kind of source of information on...
Yeah, well, don't trust me. No, absolutely. It's only information. It's not knowledge. But yes, the solstice times, it would be lovely. Oh, apropos of nothing at all, my bishop's doing everything he can, campaigning about Stonehenge and this plan to have the tunnel underneath it so that nobody gets to see it without paying. I mean, that's not the actual reason why, but it may have some of the reason why. And bless him, he's written this book called Restoring Eden, which is very about how to talk to the nature spirits. This is a Christian bishop, so that's pretty impressive, I think. And it's a good book, and I love some of the meditations in it. Well, I love all the meditations in it. I've only done some so far. But he on the one hand, I love the way he does this. On the one hand, his campaign to say, don't do this. Do not go down under the ground because these are ley lines. These are meeting places. These are chakras of the planet. We disturb them at our peril. But on the other hand, he's saying land can rewire itself. So if we do it, the land will just rewire itself. But energies will move and change and shift. And it's just strange how we've just gone so secular. We can't see any of the value in the ancient wisdoms. You know, Stonehenge is just something to stare at. There's no relevance to why it's there. You know, they'll do these programs about they had to pull these stones from so-and-so, so-and-so. And the question, well, why there then?
Yes. Yeah. You almost never hear anyone ask those kinds of questions.
No. Why? Yeah. What was it about the feeling of this land, the spirit of this land, that means that we had to mark it here?
Yeah. Yeah. And how extraordinary that despite the fact that it is neither the biggest nor the oldest, I don't think, sacred circle on this land. I don't think.
It's the tallest, I think.
But is it the tallest? Okay.
But I might be wrong. Avebury is much more important, but apparently, energetically.
Energetically, yeah. Mm. And yet, I guess maybe because it looks so impressive. Mm. But here we still are, how many thousands of years later, calling it an ancient sacred site and considering it to be important, that and Avebury and, you know, Carnesh and bloody blah, blah, blah. But on the one hand, you know, we set up, who is it that sort of guards it? Is it Natural England? Is that what?
English Heritage.
English Heritage. Yeah. You know, on the one hand, we've given it to English Heritage and we've said, hey, this is really, really important. And on the other hand, we're
charging people to see it.
Exactly.
And banning
fencing
them from it.
Yeah. Off, banning them from it. You know, I stand in some ways on both sides of that particular fence because I don't want to see it ruined. But also, it clearly is a sacred place. And, you know, are you going to start banning people from going into Westminster Cathedral because their little feet are wearing the floor out or something? You know,
that's such an interesting topic, isn't it? Because we can stretch that one out beautifully. Because again, it's about pilgrimage. Mm. In the old days, with the Hebrew Temple, for example, there were four courts, and you went into the court you were a pilgrim of. You didn't go, I know in the first temple they would have had women in the very sacred areas, in the second temple they didn't because the patriarchy was setting its feet down. But you only went into the first court if you were the beginner pilgrim.
Right.
And you would go into the second court if your knowledge was deeper, and the third court and the fourth. So there would be screams of horror about this, but I would say the same for the sacred circles like Stonehenge, which is you only actually go into Stonehenge if you know why you're there.
Well, which is kind of how it is, isn't it? Because we do let the laws of our land let in the people of our land who claim that site as ours / theirs. So
yes.
The Druids are allowed in.
Yes. And that I think that's the way it probably needs to be. We don't want people going, I mean, Banksy would be all right, but we don't want people going spray gunning the stones, do we?
No, but, you know, that hadn't happened in all the time that there was free access.
Good point. Yeah, no, good point. I'm just mooting it as a possible thing, but I do like the idea of you get a little further each time that you have a little more knowledge and a little more appreciation of where you actually are.
So the anarchist in me immediately goes, who decides?
Oh, God, yes. Quod custodit custodia, or however who watches the watchers.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's it. That's always a valid point. But I think, you know, if we could return to some sort of sacred consciousness in ourselves, there wouldn't be a problem anyway. Because everybody would know where they were and what they were interested in.
I mean, for me, that's one of the interesting things that's come up around the whole Stonehenge thing is one of the questions that for me is like the big questions or begins with a big statement is that my body and the body of the land are one.
Mm-hmm.
And on my shamanic training, that we explore that for an entire year, that very question, my body and the land and the body of the land are one. Therefore, in my body somewhere is the sacred site Stonehenge.
Mm-hmm.
And if we acknowledge it as the kind of, you know, the big one, the one that's getting all the attention and the one that potentially we are disrespecting perhaps the most because we've cut it off, we've penned it, we've fenced it, you know, whatever. Mm. We've made the seeing of it into something that's only for the select few or those who can you get in if you pay or something?
Yeah, I think you have to pay to
get
in.
Okay, so the select few, because you are either selected by identifying as a druid or selected by your capacity to pay.
Mm.
And that, so where in me is the sacred site
That
I have fenced off.
Yes. Oh, yes. And where in us is the sacred site that we want to tunnel underneath so to avoid him seeing?
Indeed.
Yes. Oh, that's a very good, very good question. I'm going to have to take that away and contemplate that one.
Hmm. If only you could see us now. Two mad old birds both nodding like we know something.
Oh, no, no, just making a note that later I'm going to have to sit with that one.
And old, the uproarious laughter has driven the beagle I was about to describe.
And they're now going to bark at us.
She was there again. And now they're going to bark.
Anyway. Yeah. Oh, sorry about that, everybody. Still.
It's one up on the constant sound of Druid whining in the background. So apologies for the, what was it, 3 weeks worth that he threw in the background?
There will probably be more hounds, but it's okay. It's real.
It's real.
It's two mates with dogs talking.
Yeah. Hello, sweetie. So let's...
You're talking to the dog there, not me.
Yeah. Have we said what we need to say about solstice?
I think we probably have, haven't we?
Okay, yeah. I mean, it is pretty simple, really. Mm. It's the time the sun stands still, and yes. Oh, yes, I wanted to defend my celebrating of Christmas, but I think I made that.
It's the day.
Yeah, it's the day the sun comes back, and therefore, to me, that's the day to have a feast.
Yes, that's the day it's visible that you've done it, yes.
Yeah.
Like the pharaoh having to go every morning and invoke the sun to rise, because obviously he can't do it without us celebrating it. But we should celebrate these things, absolutely. Totally.
Well, the Kogi people believe that the sun rises simply because they hold it in their attention and sing.
Yeah, like the Egyptians did, yeah.
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 And, you know, who are we, as younger brother, to say different?
That's
because
fair.
So far in all of existence they have been singing.
Yes.
And, you know, who, if they stopped, maybe.
Maybe the sun would not rise.
No. We just don't know. And you know.
Well, we wouldn't know if the sun didn't rise because we'd freeze to death.
Well, immediately,
but even
yes.
So, but yeah. Mm.
Yeah. You know, whether it's metaphorical or literal,
yeah.
In the West, we're so freaking arrogant. We've got this very quasi-scientific version of the world that we absolutely steadfastly believe is right.
Yeah.
And, you know, over and over again, we've been proved wrong so far. And we haven't held these opinions for that long, really.
No. Most of them come from after the Enlightenment, so it's all about rationality. That really did close down the mystical so much.
Yeah. And, now, you know, now information is so... I'm not quite sure what I'm trying to say, really. On the one hand, it's so kept for those in the know kind of thing, but also changing so fast that, for example, if you learn biology or physics, I'm not sure about chemistry, but certainly for biology or physics, what you learn at school is now so out of date that the minute you get to university, you're told to forget all that because it's rubbish and now you're going to learn what's actually going on.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that most of us aren't even still at school, and so we learnt our chemistry and biology and physics and all the rest of it back along when we all thought something else entirely. And actually the kind of what we think of as general knowledge, so much of it's absolute rubbish.
Oh yes. Oh, so much of it is, yes. It's a man told me down the pub syndrome. Nearly everything is, actually,
yeah.
Because it's only true when it was posited, if it was true then.
Yeah.
And we discover more all the time. And we also have this arrogance of thinking we know everything now.
Yeah.
We didn't know that then, but now we know it. So we know everything now.
I love the fact as well that over the years, things which at the kind of, certainly in the 50s, 60s, maybe even 70s and 80s were very much being like, oh, you know, old wives' tales. No one believes in those now. Old wives' tale, in inverted commas, after old wives' tale, is turning out to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And that as science investigates these things, the things that we thought, you know, our grandmothers did because they were funny old birds had really good scientific reasons behind them.
Mm.
So one of my favourites is that at some point, and I don't actually know when this happened, it used to be that all typically public buildings had, was it brass or copper? I can't remember. I think it might be copper door handles. And with the advent of antibacterials, the copper door handles were mostly replaced by stainless steel because you can wipe stainless steel clean with your antibacterial and there'll be no germs on it. And then they discovered that copper is naturally antibacterial. You know, duh.
Yes. Yes. Well, it's like not feeding your child from your own breast, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You know, oh, no, it's better. We've got all the vitamins in this.
How did anyone ever believe that?
Yeah, well, I deeply sympathise for any mother who can't feed a child. That is awful.
It is.
And there must be something, a backup to help them with that, because nowadays we won't do wet nurses, which, of course, was exactly what was done in previous days. And every now and then I see this wonderful post on Facebook or something where somebody says, my mare's foal has died. Has anybody got an orphan foal? You know, they pair them up.
Yeah.
And they show them bonding. And it just moves you to tears, this idea of suckling another child.
Yeah.
Somebody else's child.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is really one of the summings up of the divine feminine, the willingness to suckle all.
Mm. Yeah.
Not to say, you're the wrong sort, I'm not suckling you.
Yes. Oh, mean gosh. There's...
And that's where religion's got to. You're the wrong sort, I'm not nurturing you.
Tribes, people, indigenous people, I cannot remember where human women suckle not just other human women's children, but animals as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the animal kingdom, there's loads of examples of cross-species suckling, as it were.
Yes.
We are a weird lot. And again, that's another instance of our short-term view being so bizarre in the context of the long arm of history kind of thing. You know, now, if some, on the rare occasion where you will find a Western woman offering, for example, to suckle her friend's child, 9 times out of 10, that is met with horror.
Yes.
And only occasionally is it met with the utter gratitude and acknowledgement of how much honourable love and generosity is implicit in the offering of that.
Yes.
And yet, no more than 4 generations ago, it was normal.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And of course, the mother's milk has got everything the child needs. And what do we do now? We vaccinate the children. Apparently, children have up to 70 vaccinations now before they're
no
two.
Way.
I think that's the USA. I'm not sure it's here, but I saw an article about it, which was on a reputable site like CNN or something like that, which was detailing the amount of vaccinations that are given nowadays. And yet mother's milk gives you immunity to so many things.
Mm.
But of course, if you aren't having the mother's milk,
then
I don't want to get too deeply into vaccinations.
I'm very carefully not commenting.
But it actually is interesting about our polarised society is that it's very hard now to put out an experience or a doubt about a swiftly produced vaccine without being yelled at for being an anti-vaxxer. Because there's got to be this, it's right or it's wrong. And no, everything is grey. Everything is grey.
Except the far extremes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, somebody was telling me the other day that statistically, with I think all vaccines in, you know, recentist history, there will be 10% of the population who are stuffed.
Yeah.
Because of what they received in the vaccine, because it just, you know, it just doesn't suit their body.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Because we're all different, we're all individuals, and we're all going to react in different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bizarre. So, have we got time for another?
We have. We've got 10 minutes.
Oh, goody. Okay. So.
I'm laying down the law on time.
You could go over. It's all right.
I could.
So, I wanted to give a shout out to another beautiful, beautiful oracle deck. This is the Gate of Horn Oracle, which was created by my friend, the artist Naomi McLeod. And it's it's the major arcana of the tarot made into an oracle deck. They're all pencil drawings. They're absolutely exquisite. And again, this is another deck that's been given by the spirits to the artist, as it were.
Uh-huh.
And she's listened deeply to what needs to come into being and then drawn the images, which are so beautiful. And one of the things I absolutely love about this deck is that it doesn't come with a book. There is no
recourse
to, well, what did Nomi think when she drew the picture?
Oh, how interesting.
Which is, yeah, it's great. And so the card that I have drawn for us today is Strength, who in this deck is a beautiful, beautiful woman. She's a woman of colour. She looks to be wearing a bindi on her brow. She's got long hair, which resolves itself into an exquisite rose, both a flowering rose and a rose in bud. There are honeybees flying around her, and she has around her neck, perhaps it's a little pouch, or perhaps it's a tooth or a claw. It's not
looks like
entirely
a tooth, doesn't it?
Clear, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to me, it's a tooth or a claw, yeah. Because
strength.
She reminds me of, she makes me think very, very much of maternal strength.
Mm. But actually, that comes back to the sharing, the feeding of a child, because I was watching this wonderful show, The Surviving the Stone Age, which I've mentioned before.
Yeah.
Have you watched any of it?
I did. I watched something.
And they
great.
Work together. It's fantastic. But just so clear, the message that they said again and again. It's like with braiding a basket or anything like that. One strand is weak. Weave them together and it's strong. So yeah. Weave together motherhood and it's strong. Takes a child to raise a village. All, strength is always about working together, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Which is, you know, to me, that's what the honeybees are doing there.
Mm.
They're reminding us that there is so much strength in numbers.
And of course, our bodies are thousands of life forms, millions of little life forms in our bodies all working together.
Yeah, unless they're not, in which case we get ill.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
Quite.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yes.
So we've got something out of it already without even needing to look at what words there aren't.
What words there aren't, indeed. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm intrigued that that's the card that's come for today because... So I'm sure somebody could psychoanalyze me into a small locked room with this one. But anyway, for me, as soon as you were talking about strength, we're talking in what seems implicit in this card to me, partly, is motherhood, as we've already mentioned. Mm. When you combine the words strength and motherhood, I am swiftly taken to the bear. There's something about... When you talk about the strength in motherhood, Mother Bear always comes up. She's famous, isn't she, for being an absolutely fierce, fierce, protective mother.
Yeah.
And as soon as we're on bears, well, certainly this time of year anyway, we're on hibernation.
Yeah.
We're on that amazing thing that bears do. They actually birth their cubs in hibernation. Mm. And the bear kind of almost consumes its mother when over winter. And
yes.
They emerge in the spring, the mother and the cub, with the mother desperately hungry because
yeah.
she has literally given herself
to that child,
to
yeah.
her cub, to that child. And that speaks to me really deeply about what it is to hibernate. So amongst the kind of, I don't know what to call them, but as the kind of people who perhaps speak about our need for a deep rest at winter, I've noticed that there's kind of two sides to this, that there are the people who are acknowledging that we need to hibernate. We need deep rest in winter. We are a mammal. There is a part of us that really, really is supposed to be not getting up till it's light and going to sleep when it's dark, or at least going into rest so that we're nourishing our bodies that we work so hard. Mm. And that there's a flavour out there sometimes of judgment around that.
Oh, yes.
And that, oh, well, if you've got enough time or enough money or enough luxury to...
swan around doing nothing.
To swan around doing
yeah.
not a whole lot during December or,
yeah.
you know, whenever, then aren't you the spoilt little pagan or,
yeah.
you know, whatever. And I just think...
I love that phrase, spoilt little pagan. I've never heard that one before.
But it seems to me that there's such a large chunk of missing the point there. Because when we go into deep rest and nourishment, it isn't going into self kind of, oh, I've lost all my words today. It's not self-indulgent.
No.
It's not supposed to be self-indulgent.
No.
And it's that story of the mother bear and the cub really speaks to me to why you would want to go into deep rest in winter, so that the child of whatever it is that you're going to birth in spring can be deeply fed by the bones of she who created it. So the part of you that's the mother that's creating this thing. And you give yourself to it.
Yes.
You don't sit there eating freaking chocolates on your advent calendar, you know, to go back around to that one.
Yes. It's like the roots of the hyacinths I've got under the stairs.
Uh-huh.
I always get prepared hyacinths, and this is the time the roots grow.
Okay.
You put them in the darkness and they produce the roots, and then after Christmas you take them out and they come up and blossom. So it's similar, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what nature's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's breaking down and it's consolidating.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I think the Divine Feminine gets a bad rap, because she isn't exciting in that respect. She's not about the birth. She's not about the running around, the having fun.
She's not about the birth.
Did I say birth? That was the wrong word. Sorry, of course she's about the birth. Well, she's about the strength and the consolidation and the formation of things, rather than the running around the shops, the exciting, glittery, fun stuff. Oh, you know what I'm trying to say. Hopefully you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think I know what you're trying to say. Yeah.
Well, and she's about the darkness and the night and the death as well, because that's the source of the baby.
Yeah.
Yes, she gives birth, but it's all done in the darkness.
Yeah. Yeah, bears are a good metaphor for this.
They are a very good metaphor. They really are. Yeah.
So is that, I guess, all the running around and the shopping, that is the kind of yes, yes, yes of the masculine aspect, or the active
more,
I really want to be clear that we're not talking about women and men here. Or
no, not at all. In fact, I have this, I think it's a fairly sound theory that without women running around, Christmas would probably be an awful lot happier.
Without women running around?
Yeah. Because we organise it. I watch my mother organise it. I organise it. And to a certain extent, I have fun because there's the two of us and we have what we know as, we won't be doing it this year, but we have single friends to stay and we have lovely, long, intimate and spiritual conversations. So we always have fabulous Christmases. But the grind of all the buying of the presents and the this and the that is usually taken on by the women. And all the food shopping and the designing of the meals is usually taken on by the women. And I'm quite sure that if we didn't do it, the blokes would potter down to the supermarket on Christmas Eve, get whatever's in the freezer, defrost it overnight, cook it and have it with some beer and have a great day. And I'm sure that would be so much less stress.
Oh, God. Oh, dear. I must say, in our house, Fergus is the one who cooks Christmas lunch, and it's always insanely delicious. He's a really, really good cook.
Oh, I'm all for feasts. I'm just not for running for the around ridiculously. Beforehand.
Yeah. No, well, we don't do that, but then we wouldn't, would we? Because we don't buy modern culture. We don't really celebrate, you know, we celebrate on the day, but not that stuff. And I am, yes, literally, ideologically, utterly opposed to all the tat that comes with the celebrating of this.
And it is tat, because it actually takes you away from it in the instant gratification of things. It doesn't... I mean, how many... You, dear listener, probably do this, but how many of us are lying in our bars in darkness now, or going for walks in the darkness? How many of us can in cities, not lockdowns and tears notwithstanding? How many of us do have the ability or the teaching or the location to observe this going into the darkness, this depth, the different feel, smell, colour, timbre of every night that I walk? Every night's different. Yeah, and looking at the stars and noticing the cycles of the stars. I'm so utterly blessed that I live the kind of downscaled life that I can do that.
So for me, the massive question, which I invite everyone to ask themselves repeatedly, even if you think you don't do this, because I know that we all fall off our good intentions sometimes, even me, is that every single thing that you have that is part of the celebrating of anything, whether it's birthdays or Christmases or solstices or anything, is that if it's matter, it's made of martyr, and that therefore, as in mater, not martyred, killed for, but mother, to be more clear, if it is matter, it is made of your mother, it is made of the body of the earth.
Yeah.
And therefore, whatever the thing is, as it is made of the body of the earth, and to earth it shall inevitably return, is it enough? Is it not? It's not the right word, is it? That's not quite the right question. Is it enough in that, are you respecting the fact enough? Have you thought enough about what did it cost her? What did it cost our earth, that body,
to give this thing?
And how long is it going to be before it's nothing more than landfill? Yeah. And landfill is such a disrespectful return to the earth.
Actually, you know, the word martyr doesn't mean victim.
What does it mean?
It means to bear witness.
Oh!
It's been mistranslated for generations, and actually you are talking about martyrdom. Bearing witness, observing, honouring and acknowledging.
And refusing to give up, too.
And refusing to give up, yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing about Christmas and the way that we celebrate it in the West that upsets me the most is the tat.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a legend, and I've never seen it happen, I have watched, that creatures bow the knee on Christmas Eve at midnight. Yeah. And why would they? I mean, but it's just but the aspect of it that is all-inclusive, that when the sun returns, well, when the divine
child... It doesn't return at midnight, though, Maggie. That's why you don't see them.
It's the wrong time. Yes, all right, but the metaphor. The metaphor is lovely, that all creation is honouring the divine blueprint, the Christ consciousness, this source of everything that feeds us.
The light, the masculine spark in the feminine darkness.
Exactly.
Life.
Yeah. It's 1 week to Christmas. Christmas is on a Friday. Shall we record one just before Christmas, put it out on Christmas Eve?
Why not? Nobody has to listen, do they?
Nobody has to listen, and if they want to, they can listen on Christmas Day when we will be quietly off the internet doing wild and wonderful, magnificent things.
Definitely.
We'll see you next week. Thank you.
Lots of love.